I think you should build a career in data science.
Welcome to Build a Career in Data Science. I'm your host, Emily Robinson.
And I'm also your host, Jacqueline Nolis.
This podcast is a data download into all the non-technical knowledge and skills you need to succeed in a data science career. From getting into the field to becoming a seasoned expert, we're covering it here. In season one of the podcast, we'll be discussing a different chapter of our book, also called Build a Career in Data Science, each week. You can buy the book at bestbook.cool and get 40% off with the code BUILDBOOK40%. But if you don't have it yet, you won't get any less enjoyment out of the podcast.
But please do buy it.
This week, we're diving into chapter one of our book, which is all about the question, what is data science and a data scientist?
But before we do that, let's introduce ourselves a little bit. That seems like an important thing to do.
Hey, everyone. I'm Emily Robinson. I'm currently a senior data scientist at Warby Parker. Before that, I was working as a data scientist at DataCamp and also at Etsy. My background is in the social sciences, so I did my undergraduate degree in decision sciences, the minor in statistics, and then a master's in organizational behavior.
And I'm Jacqueline Nolis. I'm a principal data scientist at Brightloom in Seattle. I have a background in mathematics and a PhD in industrial engineering. For the last 8 years, I've been doing consulting, data science consulting, and helping companies all over the country of all different sizes and problems, helping them with their data science. And then recently, I decided to go back into industry now here at Brightloom. And Emily and I together wrote a book about how do you become a data scientist or become a more senior data scientist or move up into management. So it's all an entire book about data science and really just not the technical stuff, but really the career stuff. What do you do to, how do you become this job, become a person who has this job and become senior at it. And we decided that it'd be a really good idea to not just have a book out, but, to have all the stories that didn't make into the book because they're too personal about us and our backgrounds. And so this podcast is that. It's us talking about what went into the book and what do we think? And what is the hot takes that became the more gentle, helpful book?
Yeah, and we've also both have blogs, and we post on Twitter about data science, of course, data science careers, programming, so on and so forth. You can find me on Twitter at Robinson_ES, and my blog is hookedondata.org.
And my Twitter handle is at SkyTetra, so that's SkyeTetra, and my website is jnolis.com. Okay, so with that out of the way, episode one. What is data science? What is data science? What is it?
this is a very controversial question, I feel like. And I don't know if we want to dive into it now, but I don't think we can avoid talking about gatekeeping in this episode, because I think that's really tied up in people's definition of especially what a data scientist is and who, quote unquote, deserves that title.
So you're saying that the very concept of defining data science is used as a weapon to keep people from careers they could otherwise have.
Absolutely. Oh. And I think some people think it dilutes the brand. It's if these people get to call themselves data scientists and I won't be as appreciated as much. And I'm better and smarter than them, so I should get this prestigious title. But I don't know. I call BS on all of that. I really like Cassie Kozerkoff's definition, which is data science is the art of making data useful.
I think that's true. And okay, so that's kind of my issue with defining what is data science is it's kind of it gets into that what is music? Is silence music kind of a thing? is making data useful? Is a single cell in a single Excel spreadsheet data science? And it kind of gets vacuous. Is that the right word? It gets kind of pointless of a thought exercise, but it's a very real idea of hey, my job is going to be taking data from a company and trying to figure out how we can do something useful with it. How can we help people make better decisions, help customers have a better experience, but actually taking knowledge and data and using it to improve things.
Right. And I think it's important to point out you can do data science without being a quote unquote data scientist, right? All of us do writing, or most of us do writing as part of our jobs. We wouldn't say we're professional writers, but it's an important skill that we have. And it's good to get better at.
Oh, I thought you were saying that like writing is itself also data science, and like stretching like is,
the
is writing
words are
data? Yeah, that's right.
The words are the data, Jacqueline. Yeah. No. That was an analogy that is not original to me, but I do like it because I think it's important, you know, and we'll talk about this more certainly in future episodes, but that that the people, even folks whose main job is in data science, may not have the data scientist title, right? There's tons of other title out there. There's the new research scientist title, which is like meant like, oh, well, the data analyst became data scientists. So the data scientists are now research scientists and like go have PhDs. But then there's data analysts and program analysts and just tons of people doing this.
Okay. And so like, I have no idea if you're listening to this podcast, I have no idea if you're like a seasoned data scientist expert or you want to be a data scientist or I don't know anything about that. But like, for someone like, can we just explore what you were saying a little bit more about like, you don't have to be a data scientist to do data science. Like what is, could you just like give me an example? Like what is someone's day where they are not a data scientist and they're doing data science? Like what would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think marketing is one field, right? Like trying to see how our campaigns performing or working with Facebook and doing multiple ad campaigns. You're looking at that. You're saying, okay, what should we set as our maximum bid, right? We don't want to spend above this. How can we tell, how can we take the ROI, you know, the return on investment Facebook is telling us, and now I need to present it to the heads of the company. How can I fight for a bigger marketing budget by showing, you know, the improvements and that, you know, for every dollar we spend on marketing, we're getting more back in customers. So that's just one example of someone who may be using tools, whether it's, Facebook data analytics. It could be a business intelligence tool like Looker to view the data, to make some graphs to show, stakeholders, which could be their boss. It could be the CEO of the company. That's someone who, you know, may not call themselves a data scientist, may not be a data scientist, but is using data in their day to day to bring, you know, one, to like help the company, but also honestly to help keep their job because they need to show that they're delivering value.
Yeah. And I think maybe like an even smaller example is like if you're a small business owner, like let's say you own like a single candy store and each month you need to figure out how many pieces of candy, you know, types of how much candy you need to order each month. Like you're taking your historic data of like, well, how much we stored last month? I assume there's going to be a 10% growth in sales next month. I need to account for inventory. Like that is like a very small form of data science of using historic data to try and make a decision. But also, I mean, like, okay, so most of us perhaps we're all data scientists by that definition, which is like, sure, but some people actually have the job title of data science, you know, data scientist. And like, I'm gonna poke you a little more, like, what is that? Like, what does it mean to like have the job title of data scientist?
Yeah, so I think there's a component here of like, what does it mean to have the job title of data scientist, which is that some company or person was willing to hire you with that title, right? That's kind of what it boils down to, is how do you get that job? And the reality on the ground right now is, what do you need at most companies to get hired as a data scientist? And what you need generally is you need some SQL. So SQL database, being able to write SQL queries so you can access data in the database. You need some programming in the form of R and Python. And you also need some, you know, statistics and machine learning model. So you can go a little bit beyond just presenting the numbers to someone and really work on interpreting them and extrapolating from those numbers.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, so there's some special skills you need, right? Like you just listed, you need some sort of database stuff. And like, we can talk a little bit about this more. But this idea is like, you're basically doing the same job as that person who runs the candy store or that person who is doing the marketing campaign analysis, where it's, you're doing the same thing of, I'm going to take data and try and do it something useful with it, only you're doing it on a grander scale. So like when you're a data scientist for a living, what you're doing is you're taking these data, these different points of data, and trying to make a decision or do something with it. Can I talk a little bit? So I was thinking about this before the episode, like what is a data scientist? And I really wanted to tell the story of like how I decided to become a data scientist. And like, you can maybe share yours too next. We can. But I really want to share it because like, I think it actually kind of, to me, illuminates like what is a data scientist.
Go for it.
So I went to college. I started at college. I went to a technical college to try and be an electrical engineer. And I quickly realized I hate electrical engineering. I took an electromagnetics course in physics. And I'm like, this is not for me. And I'm like, I like mathematics though. So I'm gonna get a major in math. And I didn't know what I was going to do with it. I just thought, that seems interesting. And everyone's like, oh, so you're going to be a teacher? You're going to be a teacher? Math major, you're going to become a teacher? I'm like, no. And I remember hearing like once or twice that like, hey, you know, companies hire people to use mathematics to help make the companies run better. I'm like, oh, that sounds exactly what I want to do. Because, you know, I always looked up as like a engineering kind of person. I always looked up as like the business people, like they're the movers and shakers. And I kind of aspire to that. And I'm like, I'd love to use mathematics for that. And so in my head, and what the job was of mathematician who uses math to help businesses was, okay, close your eyes, if you're driving and listening to this, but like close your eyes and like imagine like a beautiful mahogany table with all these business people, all like white men in suits who had just come back from the golf course, you know, barely, you know, putting in an hour's worth of work because they're so busy being, you know, moving, you know, doing the politics of the company. And they're like, all right, should we open up a new factory in Guatemala? You know, should we do it? Like, oh, well, they're making all these political deals. Like, my friend owns a plot of land. We could put the factory there. And, you know, then meanwhile, like near the end of the meeting, someone real quiet in the back just speaks up very quietly and says, hey, you know, actually, we ran these simulations down in the lab, and we can find that there's an 80% increase in revenue if we put it in Texas instead of Guatemala. And, you know, the CEO is stunned, and he's like, oh my goodness, you have the one thing I could never have, actual data. Yes, we will build there. And then soon, me, that quiet person in the back, next thing, 5 years later, I'm the CEO. The company's so good. And I think now, and that is legitimately like a story I stole in my head. And I like think now, obviously, there's a lot wrong with that story. But like, there's actually some truth there of like what a data scientist actually does. Of like, people have to make decisions. And sometimes they make decisions in really nebulous ways without data. And so having a person who can try and bring some like light and shine some reality onto the situation is extremely helpful for a company. And that is one of the things a data scientist can do as their job.
Oh, I thought you were going to end the story with like, and then I went into the real world and I was so disappointed because like, no, none of the white men in business suits ever listened to me and they just went with their golf buddy. But I'm glad it was more optimistic than that.
Well, we can dive into why that was an improper, actual, like that was untruthful of a thought. And I think actually the thing that most frustrates me was not the like the white businessman in suit part, which is definitely frustrating, but it's the fact that like I assumed that with data, as a data scientist, I'd go in and be like, well, and the data says this, therefore it's the truth. But that's not what happens. Like the actual structure of the meeting is the CEO looks at me or whoever in the back and says, oh my God, we would really like some data. Like, what is the analysis showing where you should put the factory? And the data scientist says, like, I can't possibly tell you. It's so inconclusive, right? We're missing the data, or the data just can't be forecasted that way. So it's like 80% of the data scientist's job is to say, sorry, we can't do that. And then the 20% is to actually, that 20% is so useful, it makes up for the 80%. And that's frustrating.
That's a good teaser for our 13th episode, which is going to be on data science failure, because I think that's one thing you have to get comfortable with. It's like sometimes you know right away, you're like, there's no way we can do that. That's magic. That's not data science. But sometimes like you do dive in and it only takes, you know, a little bit, you know, takes you a lot of time. You're working in buildings, models, all these things. And it turns out actually there's no signal. We can't predict this thing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's like a real problem. And that's kind of the thing when people talk about like, what is data science? They focus so heavily on like using mathematics and statistics and machine learning to build these beautiful models that do incredible things and recommend products and drive cars. And they don't really realize how much of the job is like 80%. Oh, you know, I can't possibly get this to work. Let's try something else. But that's important, but it's just not as glamorous. What did you think a data scientist was before you became one?
So I don't know. So I feel like this is going to be a problem of like anytime I follow up one of your stories with one of mine, because I just can't get, you just bring this drama. So listeners, like the bestbook.cool link we sent at the beginning, that was Jacqueline's short link. And mine is datasidecareer.com. They lead to the same place, but I think that tells you a little bit of the energy that each of us bring to some of these conversations. But
well, I mean, in fairness, I spent like a week like crafting that story in my head because it's definitely true, but I'm like, I want to get like the most like dramatic telling of it. And perhaps that was unfair.
Yeah, you did give me a warning. This is going to be so dramatic. No, mine more came out of a frustration with academia. So my background is in the social sciences. I was doing a PhD in organizational behavior over in France, all in English. And, you know, the social science research process is very similar to the data science process. It's, you know, looking at literature, it's coming up with a question, it's gathering data usually, whether that's by running an experiment or by looking for archival data sets, analyzing the data and presenting it. But what's frustrating is that in academia, unlike in industry, this process, because the final goal is to publish a paper, can take literally 7+ years. I've had professors who are still working on papers from 7 to 10 years ago. So it's a very slow process. And also, it might, your work might not be that impactful outside of, you know, the small community of, like, not even within the, it might not even be impact the field of, say, organizational behaviors. It might be like your tiny little subfield within that, right? And there certainly are academics who have often, by publishing popular books, have had a huge influence, of course, you know, outside of academia. But I didn't really want to do that process, but I was like, well, all these trainings, like both the statistical training I had, the, you know, also some of the study, the topics I studied in organizational behavior, I was like, okay, I think this could work well. This translates really well into data science. And I did cheat a little bit, because part of what's different with us, Jacqueline, is you started in the field much earlier, like before it was even called data science. And I started now about 4 years ago in 2016, so still different than it is now, but it was more defined. You know, there were boot camps, there were starting to be formal programs, and I also benefited. My brother had recently started as a data scientist at Stack Overflow, so I got a little peek into what it was like.
So, like, let's talk about your experience a little bit, because I think this is going to be informative. So you were in, you were doing, you know, research, you know, you're getting a PhD, studying social science, and you're like, that's enough. Things are moving too slowly. I want to actually do something practical. So that happened. And then you follow the one track that you point out. Like, you're like, I will go down the data science route. There must have been something in between the two. Was it just like, oh, my brother Dave's doing it and it seems pretty cool, so I want to do it too? Which is like, don't get me wrong, that's a great heuristic and your brother Dave's a very nice guy. But like, is there, what led you to be like, okay, this thing that I haven't done before is the thing I want to do? And I bring this up just because I think that for a lot of people who are considering being data scientists, like trying to understand like what is the thing that means, like, oh, this is the job for me. Like, that's hard. It's hard to know.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Jacqueline, it's like the best job of the 21st century and all those things.
The sexiest job. Yeah.
The sexiest job. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. I mean, no, I think part of it was like, well, I'm not like committing for like the rest of the 40 years to do this. But I was like, okay, these are the skills I have now. They fit nicely with data science. I actually went and did a data science bootcamp called METIS right after I finished. So I left my PhD with my master's after 2 years. And like went immediately. I took like a 1 week vacation that went immediately to this boot camp, moving back to New York where I'm from. Yeah. And I mean, I think looking back, I think it's just cause like, I was like, all right, this career, you know, has some of the stuff I've already been doing, like analyzing data, you know, communicating it, getting to, you know, use these quantitative skills I've been building, programming in R, which I've been doing since college. And I'm going to get to use this to, you know, help a company to and look at company data. Like that was the other thing. One of the frustrating things about a PhD is like trying to get real data to work on if you don't run experiments. Like you're like, oh, I want to like do a survey at a company, or I want to see like, you know, what, you know, actual like sales and stuff at the company. Like that would help me so much, but it can be really hard to get that data. So it was kind of exciting to be like, all right, I can do this career around data and like I won't have like the data might not be there. That's certainly a frustration, but I won't. Well, I've never had to worry about data access issues because I work at a tech company, but I think you may, Jacqueline, can talk more about like the data. You know, the data exists at the company, but it's a real pain to get it. But I haven't had to experience that yet.
Okay. So this seems really interesting to me because you were like, I'm in a social science program. And then you're like, hey, I have the skills more or less to be a data scientist, I'm going to take a boot camp and that'll get me to the point where I can fulfill the career of a data scientist. And I think that's true for a lot of people. If you think of a lot of academic backgrounds, you know, chemistry, I know people who have been data science who came from like, you know, fishery studies, like there's like 1,000 things that are, hey, I'm a scientific person and I'm going to analyze data and try and find a result. That is basically the job of data science. It's just, you know, whether you're doing it on fish data or on, you know, company data about, you know, forecasting sales or something like that. So I think data scientist being the job of a person who analyzes data is a job that a lot of people have a route into in a way that they may not of like software developer or something that's, you know, requires maybe more of like an actual, a very specific like experience. I think you can have a much broader set of people who come into the field of data science, which is loop, you know, it's enticing for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the advantages to being newer. And also to be clear, like I minored in statistics in undergraduate, like as much as there's not really one traditional route into data science, like there is in software engineers of like you do a computer science undergraduate degree. But I would say like I had some of that formal background. But I do think what I tell people a lot is that the The good thing about data science, because it also involves a lot of domain knowledge, is often your previous background is not a hindrance, it's an advantage. So for example, if you worked in marketing at a company, like that's a huge advantage if you then transition to data science and say work in a marketing department, or you've been working in healthcare and maybe you go and do, you know a lot about like the healthcare field and some issue, you know, about HIPAA, like all these things around data, and then transition to work in data at a healthcare company. So I think, you know, you don't want to view it as a hindrance. It actually could be a big advantage to have a quote unquote non-traditional background.
That makes sense. And I think when we think about like, what is a data scientist? What is data science? You know, analyzing data. You're right. Like having all the data, having all this marketing data isn't useful if you don't know enough about marketing to make sense of it. And that's true for a lot of different areas where data science is used. I think we talked about this a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit just about the what people who are not data scientists think data science is versus what it actually is. And I kind of, in my head, it's like, I kind of think of the person who's like, data is the new oil, which is generally a statement that is made by someone who is not a data scientist. Because that statement that people say a lot, data is the new oil, it's this idea that there's all this information in data, and there's all this like value, and it's just waiting for a data scientist to come in and get it. And I think that there's kind of this like general perception of for within the business community that what a data scientist does is takes all that valuable data that you don't know what to do with and finds an amazing use for it. And I think that is often not true. And I think that is a dangerous thought. Like, it's not like a data scientist takes data and then pulls, you know, cast their spell on it to get the value out. It's much more that a data scientist has a very clear objective of like, hey, I want to understand why customers are leaving, or I want to understand, you know, like, hey, we had sales low last week. Can I try and figure out why? Or, you know, like they have some sort of goal, and then they use the data in a kind of, you know, use a number of techniques to try and get from the data a result that provides that role. But their job isn't to just take a pile of data and then magic it away. It's they're given a clear objective by someone, and then they use data to try, perhaps, to meet that objective. They may or may not succeed, but they don't like just wizard value out of data. It's, hey, let's try and do something useful with the data that we know of in advance.
Yeah, I also really like Hillary Parker has talked a lot about this, but the value of design thinking and data science. One of her big points is, and she's one of the people we interview in the book, is often you have to go back and forth with stakeholders because what they say they want at first is like not necessarily what they want. You have to dig in a little bit. And part of that process also may be not just using data you already have, but working with a team to collect more data. So Hillary works over at Stitch Fix, and she talked about like this new product she helped roll out where people can, you know, base Stitch Fix is a clothing company. You tell them your style and they send you like 5 items with a mix of a machine learning algorithm and a real stylist. And so that was the business model for a while. But now what they offer as well is based on what you bought before, they'll make complete outfits for you. So they'll be like, oh, you had bought this shirt from us. Here's this pair of pants and these boots and this purse that would go really well with that. So she did a lot of work. She couldn't only do that by using the data that already existed within Stitch Fix. She also had to work with the, a stylist and many other people at the company to collect more data to build this product.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that like there's a lot of fields like design that data scientists can learn from because, data, like it's not just about data. It's about trying to find a use for that humans can do with the data. So there's a lot of fields like that data scientists can learn a lot from. And if you think about a data scientist as someone who just sits in a corner and uses algorithms to make data, tell stories, like it's not that. It's very much about like communication, understanding humans, understanding like why humans make decisions. And the idea of like a really like the best data scientists are the one who understand people just as much as understanding data. You know what? Let's take a break. This week's episode is sponsored by the algorithm K-Means. K-Means is used by companies all across the world to help cluster data into a set number of groups. It can be used almost anywhere, from grouping similar company products at a large retailer to grouping engine test data at an auto company. No training data? No problem. K-Means is unsupervised, meaning you don't have to pass it a target metric. It figures out the clusters all by itself. And right now, listeners can get a special offer to get 10% more similar output clusters. Just set up the K-means algorithm offer code parameter to build career. That's K-means offer code parameter as the string build career. Okay, so we're back. And so now we're gonna talk a little bit more about the different types of data scientists and data science, because there's the role really could mean any number of things. So I guess, you know, I'll kick us off here. I think the, you know, we talk about this in our book, which you should buy. And our book, that's not subliminal. That was bliminal. So I've got to stay focused here. So the book, you know, we really classify data scientist as like one of three roles. So the first role is like an analyst. And an analyst is a person who takes data from a company and uses it to create reports and dashboards and get that data from like the raw source to a place where the business people can use it. So it's a lot of like setting up these pipelines, creating reports, lots of Excel, and really providing value to the business leaders by getting data to the people who need it. The second type we list is a decision scientist. And the decision scientist is mostly what we talked about before the break. It's the person who takes a large set of data and tries to use it to help make a decision for a business, whether that's where to put a factory, whether to launch a new product, if the sales are going to be forecasted high or low next quarter. That's all decision science, like one-off questions being answered. And then the last type of data scientist we list is a machine learning engineer. And so a machine learning engineer's job is to take a data set and make it like continuously help the business make decisions. So for instance, if you're working at Netflix, the product recommend or the movie recommendation algorithm, that would be like a machine learning engineer's work is to help set that up so that you're not just like making one-time decisions, but you're actually continuously making decisions for your customers. This can be things like deciding what coupon to send a customer. It could be, you know, when Amazon recommends a product, that's machine learning in practice. But it's really, whereas decision science is like one-time big decisions, machine learning is like continuous, constant decisions that usually go straight to the customer. And those are three like fairly different types of jobs that we put all under the data science umbrella. So tell me, Emily, what do you think about that?
Yes, and I think, and to be clear, like even though we sort of put titles on each of those, machine learning engineer, decision scientist, analyst, right? They may be called those actual titles. They may be called data scientists. They may be research scientists. You know, who knows? There's lots of options there. And I think it's helpful to break that up because it can be very overwhelming when looking at data science job descriptions because, you know, most people lean towards one of this. You know, it can be just, you know, it's like you look at one data scientist position, you're like, wow, this is asking for these, like all these, you know, computer science skills and working with these like big data sets. And I don't have any of those skills. Like maybe I can't be a data scientist. And it's like, well, no, like, you know, maybe you're not prepared right now to be a machine learning engineer, but you'd be a great decision scientist. Like you have a lot of statistics background. So I think it's helpful as well for companies to organize this way. And I've been really heartened that more companies are doing this, often by putting a comma after a title. So it might be data scientist, comma, machine learning, data scientist, comma, analytics, because that's like a nice way to signal to job seekers, like which type of post this is and that the company recognizes that, you know, data science is so broad. We don't expect you necessarily to know everything. And like, this is what this role specializes in.
Yeah. And I would say that the, because the skill sets are so, you know, fairly different for each one of these roles, whereas like machine learning, there's a lot of software development practices, whereas decision science is much closer to statistics. You know, you can be careful because if a company has a job posting where they like want you to both create real-time algorithms that continuously run and perform metrics like machine learning, and they also want you to do one-off analysis that, you know, help make major decisions, like that's asking you to do two really different roles at once, which is a sign that either the company is so small that they just need one person to try and do everything, or it's a sign that the company isn't necessarily organized yet, which can make like a data science job more difficult to do.
Yeah, this is a nice lead into like the unicorn data scientist idea, right? Like this person who can do it all. And to be fair, like you mentioned small companies, right? If you're the first data scientist at a startup, like you'll often wear these different hats. You know, you'll do some, you'll make a dashboard to present numbers. You'll also do some statistical inference to make a decision. And maybe you build like, you know, pretty rudimentary like machine learning recommendation model. But the idea is like you're doing all of that though at a different level than the person at Google, right, who's working on the self-driving car. And there shouldn't be that expectation that, like, that is your level of knowledge because you're a little bit more of a jack of all trades.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think when we talk about the unicorn data scientist, it's this idea that when companies are looking for someone, like, oh, you got to have good communication skills and good coding skills and good blah, blah. Like, you have to have all these things before you could possibly work for us because our job, like, our environment is so, you know, wild that we can only hire people who can do all of that. And I think in the last few years, this has kind of dropped off a bit. And I think it's largely dropped off. Well, I think one, people are getting smarter about it. But two, there are so few senior data scientists that it's just like the companies that try to hire this just can't find these people. And there are lots of people who are data scientists and there are lots of people who want to be data scientists. But there are very few extremely senior data scientists because the field hasn't been around long enough for that. And there are even fewer people who are super senior and have all of the skills listed. So like companies are just wisened up to that's just an impossible task.
Yeah. And I think realizing that, like, yes, maybe one person can't do it all, but you can have a data science team that does it, right? You have people who come from different backgrounds and have different strengths. And that way you can, you know, your data science department can do all of this, but it's not one person who has to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
And now I want to ask you, Jacqueline, about what is your hot take if people are like, well, folks who are doing analytics, those are analysts. Those aren't really data scientists. They're not doing data science. You got to do machine learning to be a data scientist.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do I have a hot take? And then I have like a galactic brain on that one. So first, this is thank you, Emily, as I step onto the soapbox. The idea that one of these jobs is better than another is like just nuts, just absolutely like ludicrous. Right? The idea that like somehow machine learning is like a more serious job than decision scientist or decision scientist is more serious of a job than an analyst. It's ridiculous because it's not like they all require different skills, but these skills to be a good analyst are often in many ways just as difficult to like get really good at as the skills of a machine learning engineer. So it's not like one is like a truer, more difficult like burden to do. And like, they're all hard in different ways. And I think the idea that, you know, like, only the best of the best can become machine learning engineers, it's not true. It's just that the machine learning engineer requires more of a software background, which is a different life path than a decision scientist with more statistics background, or an analyst, which is usually more of a business background. Like, one is not better than the other. One is just, they're just different. And, okay, so that's my hot take, is that, like, hey, look, like, if people are telling you, like, oh, you're just an analyst, or, oh, you're just a decision scientist, like, please do not try and take that seriously because that's usually a sign that person's a jerk. But the galactic brain take, and I'm not the person who's thought of this, like lots of people have this thought, but I just love saying it, which is, this is wildly sexist. It's almost exclusively that the machine learning engineer it's a group of mostly dudes, and it's mostly dudes who are like, oh no, like this is like the hardest stuff. There aren't women here because it's hard. But like decision scientists used to be the job that was like the really hard one, like only the best could be decision scientists. But then enough women became it that now that's the easy to be one. And it's like the same thing that happened in software development with front end developers, right? Where that used to be the hard thing. And then a lot of women got into it. And now like that's the easy thing. The hard end is back end. And like, it's just ridiculous. Like, don't judge other people. Everyone's jobs are fine. There's not like a hierarchy here. And don't be sexist, please.
I totally agree with that take. And it's something I'm worried about, too, because unfortunately, it's not just like the gatekeeping that comes. Front-end engineering also pays less than doing back-end engineering. And that's not there's been a lot of research that I found when women do enter a career or like a subfield that it drives down the wages. You know, and if you look at sort of like similar jobs, it's like, well, if one is I think one example is like janitors, like, you know, and cleaning people, is that the one that's more male dominated, janitors, is paid better. And that they've been able to look at it causally because they've seen as careers have shifted when women enter it for one reason or another, the pay goes down. So I don't know. There's not really a good answer for that.
Well, okay. Well, so on that point, and I would say that I think in general, the pay tends to go analyst is lowest, then decision scientist, and then machine learning engineer is the highest, which is frustrating. And I think a lot of it is just what you were talking about. But one weird consequence of like the ongoing pandemic and stuff is that my suspicion is that the most likely to get let go are the people at the height, like the ML and decision scientists are like more likely to let go than the analysts, right? Like the machine learning is usually in like pie in the sky projects. Who knows if they're going to work? It's going to take years of R&D, often quickly cut. the decision scientists, like, okay, we need them, like, the business people need, like rely on them to help them make decisions, but, like, they can still kind of get cut because they're often not, like, some of them still are not, like, urgently needed. And the analysts are, like, just, like, pivotal to, like, getting data to flow through the company. And so it is true that, like, oh, the higher wages, the hardest to get jobs, they're machine learning engineer or whatever. But also, like, that's just a, like, that's a very vulnerable place in many ways. And the, like, it's a lot easier if you get laid off as an analyst. There are a lot more analyst jobs out there in the world than there are high-end AI research whatevers. And so I think that, like, this is a little bit, like, a risk just as much as an asset for some of these people. Which, again, if you're a machine learning engineer and you're not sexist, power to you. That's great. And I, like, wish you the best in your career. I just, you know, people who are judging other people for these sorts of things, like, just be careful about it.
Yeah. No, that's such a, yeah, thank you, Jacqueline, for that.
Thank you for the soapbox to stand on.
Yeah. And one thing I want to talk about, too, is switching from one to another. You know, because we've talked a little bit about how each of them have different backgrounds, and they are fairly different. So, like, is it possible to go from being a decision scientist to a machine learning engineer or vice versa?
Yeah. So I would say that I did that switch in my career, like, for some years ago, a couple, maybe less than that. Anyways, I did that switch. And, you know, for me, I went from basically a decision scientist to basically not an ML engineer, but a data scientist who actually put the models into production. So closer to an ML engineer. And that switch of doing analysis to show an executive versus making a model that would then be handed off to, like, an actual machine learning engineer so they can productionize it. That switch wasn't nearly as hard as I kind of feel like the world made it out to be. Like, at the end of the day, in either data scientist or either decision scientist or machine learning engineer, you're often building models. And it's just, do you want to polish them so they look good in PowerPoint or polish them so they look good in a Docker container that you could then deploy into a production state? So I think it's possible. And I think same goes for, you know, if you want to go from, like, analyst to decision scientist, I think there are routes there too. So I think there's a lot of movement that can happen.
Yeah. And I do think, like, there's, you know, sometimes some extra work you have to put in. So one thing we didn't mention at the end in our book, at the end of every chapter, we have an interview with a data scientist. And in the first chapter, it's Robert Chang, who works in data science at Airbnb. And I don't think we talked about this in the interview, but he's actually talked publicly in blog posts and on his GitHub about how he made the transition from more analytics to machine learning. And to do that, like, he used to use R, and he ended up learning Python, not because R can't do machine learning production, Jacqueline, you have a big soapbox there, but because at T-Mobile, that was what the teams that put models into production use Python. So he has a GitHub repo if you're interested in learning Python about, like, how we went about doing that. But it's certainly possible. It may, depending on how close or far you are, it may take some work. So I actually want to ask you, Jacqueline, so you said it wasn't that much work. So did you just, like, wake up one day and you're like, I'm going to do machine learning and production? And just,
no,
like,
goodness, no. No. So I had a couple of things going for me. One, at that point, I was consulting for a project where I was embedded in a software engineering team. So I was basically like, I want to do what you all do. And so I was able to, like, have support of coworkers to teach me things like Docker. So that was one thing that helped me. And another thing that helped me is, while I don't have a background in software development, I really do enjoy the process of writing code and thinking about code. And so the idea of, like, learning how to make a unit test, because of my background in, like, having done a lot of kind of coding-ish things, it wasn't that hard to learn. So it really was like, I had a nice support network and background to help me. But that said, I think we had more people on that project join the group, and a lot of them were data scientists, and they're still able to pick up a lot of this stuff too. And they, you know, again, they weren't, they, like, their background maybe wasn't as much in, like, coding or things like that. So, like, I saw a lot of people make this jump. Like, if you can learn some of the techniques you use in one of these three roles, then you can probably learn the techniques that are used in other of the roles. Like, it's just more about, like, your ability to learn skills than it is about, like, oh, if you aren't born with the bloodline of software developer, you will never, like, it's not like that.
Yeah, so we jumping around. That was not great.
That was perfect. But,
how do you figure out, okay, so let's go from one to another, but, like, how can you figure out in the first place, like, what you want to specialize in, right? So we've shared these, like, three things, but, you know, how did you figure out, like, what you wanted to do, and how do you recommend people think about this?
So here's my answer to that. That's a great question. And my answer to that is I have no idea. I basically kept, I did a repeated process of taking a job, realizing, oh, I don't like this. And then switching a job, being like, no, I don't like this either. Until eventually I disliked each job less until I started getting jobs I did like. And, you know, one thing I learned is that I really don't like jobs where it's my task to keep things running and maintain them. So my first job out of school was more closer to an analyst job. And I realized that just, I am too like mad science-y to really be able to handle that job well. I constantly need to be inventing new things. So I pretty quickly shifted to decision science. And I liked that for a while. And then eventually I found myself in a, you know, like for whatever reason, I left a job where I was a decision science. And then I got into a new job and I was like, oh, hey, this one's machine learning engineering. Or closer to that is about putting data science into production. And so I didn't really set out with a goal of like, and this is, you know, I read a book on jobs and I learned a lot about like, I did the color test and I'm a green, and green means data decision scientist. Like I didn't have that. I just kept messing things up until eventually things started to go right. How about you?
Yeah. And listeners, you can't see it, but like Jacqueline's like was gesturing a lot and she knocked over a pop filter.
It's very dramatic. Very dramatic.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I do think that, you know, kind of what we said about, like, even though you can come from different backgrounds, like, roughly, like, ML, like, more software, computer science background, decision science, stats, and, like, analytics, like, business. So my first job out of the bootcamp was at Etsy with the title Data Analyst, although they're now called Data Scientists. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I knew was I didn't want to, like, go into a room and, like, research for months. And there aren't that many data science jobs like that, but, like, that's what I just left in academia. So I was like, well, I want to work, like, pretty closely with a partner team and, like, be delivering value to them. And that's often falls in an analytics type role. So I was at Etsy, you reported like within the data organization, but you were embedded with a team. So I worked with the search team and I found I really liked that. And I also ended up doing a fair amount of experimentation because that's what the search org needed. And that's a little more decision science-y because, you know, you the whole thing about experimentation, right, is you show half the people on your website the old experience, half the new. But just because, you know, 50 out of 100 people convert in the new one and 49 out of 100 convert in the old one, that doesn't mean the new one's better, right? You got to use some like thinking and statistics skills to try to parse out like, yes, this number is greater than the other, but is that just due to chance? So I'm sort of sense that I've kind of had that hybrid like decision science analyst role. And for me, I just think it came down to the background of like a little bit more statistics, but also with like the organizational behavior, some business domain knowledge.
I think that's smart. And I think that for people who are looking to get into data science, if you kind of look at, you know, think about those three roles and look a little bit about like what they kind of do, you will probably find that one feels more like what you're interested in. And so like, I would follow your instinct on that a little bit, as opposed to like, well, I don't feel like I have the data skills to be a machine learning engineer, but I hear that's the best one. So I'm going to try real hard to like it follow your gut is what I would say.
Yeah. And I do think also you had a really good point about like how you sort of found you like didn't like this, you switched. Like that is the advantage of being in a tech career is it's very common to switch companies, you know, or within a company, like even like every year, year and a half, 2 years. So, you know, getting your, we'll talk a lot more about this in future episodes, but like getting your foot in the door is often the hardest part, like getting your first data science job. So not worrying too much about the, like the most like perfect job of, but recognizing like pretty much, even if it's not great, you're definitely going to be learning things. You're going to be learning what you don't like. You're going to be learning how like data works at companies. You're going to be learning about workplace, you know, politics around this, so on and so forth. So not to stress too much about like, oh, I must do all the introspection and like find the perfect job for me.
Yeah. What you said. Yeah.
Thanks, Jacqueline.
Let's go to a break. And we're back. And so for the last part of this episode, I thought we'd play a little game, Emily and I. Emily does not know about this game yet, listeners. No. So here's the game. So first, if you Google search for like data scientist, like what skills does a data scientist need? You will get these terrible, cruel infographics like the one I have in front of me. And I'm going to read it to you. And it says at the top, modern data scientist. And then here, I'm going to read that text. Data scientist, the sexiest job of the 20th century, requires a mixture of multidisciplinary skills ranging from an intersection of mathematics, statistics, computer science, communications, and business. Finding a data scientist is hard. Finding people who understand who a data scientist is equally hard. Not if they listen to this podcast. So here's a little cheat sheet on who the modern data scientist really is. So that's what it says at the top. Then it shows like a little picture of a woman. And then it lists like 1,000 skills, like just 1,000 skills. And like, this is apparently what a data scientist needs to know is every one of these skills. So anyways, so here's the game. So I'm going to list some skills. Most of them come from this sheet, but I've picked a few from other places too. I'm going to list some skills. And then Emily, I'd like you to just real quick define that skill, like what it is real quick. And then tell me if you think a data scientist really needs it. Does that sound good?
Oh God, I feel like this will be an interview quiz. What if I don't know what a skill is?
There's no wrong answers. And well, if you don't know, that's fine. We should talk about that then. Yeah. And like, I'll chip in too. That's like, true. We'll have a little discussion.
All right, let's do it.
All right, ready? Okay, first skill, statistics.
Okay, so statistics, super broad. Statistics is a huge field. Like I mentioned, I minored in it. Yes, so I do think basic statistics definitely necessary. Like, how do I do a hypothesis test? Like, why can't I just, you know, 50 is greater than 100, 50 out of 100 is greater than 49 out of 100. You know, yes, that's true. But like, could that be due to chance? How would I tell? Like, what kind of test do I do? That's certainly true. That being said, there's a ton of subspecialties in statistics, for example, like time series analysis or forecasting that you may not ever use, but other people that may be their entire job. So yes, I think a basic knowledge is needed. Depending on the type of data science role, you may need to have, you know, a specialized skill in a subfield, but you certainly don't feel like you have to know like everything in statistics, because that's huge. And even, you know, statistics professors don't know quote unquote everything.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think things like hypothesis tests, trying to tell if something's true or false, you need, and like, you know, like linear regression or like trying to figure out how like data relates to other data sets. That stuff you need. But you're right. It goes super deep. It's super broad. Probably don't need all of it. Just need a little, like, the basics. Okay, skill two, R/Python.
Yes. So R/Python. So those are two of the most popular programming languages for data science. I would say you practice. So we talk about this a little bit in our book. So both practically you need it in terms to get hired. Pretty much any data scientist job now will require one of those two languages. But we also talk about there's a lot you can do when you can code that you can't do by using a tool like Excel or, you know, business intelligence. And maybe you can't do it in Excel because there's too many rows, your data set's too big. Or you can't do it in a BI tool because that tool is limited by what the creators, you know, thought that people might use. And you can go and request a feature for them, like say with Looker, which is a business intelligence dashboard, but there's no guarantee they'll implement it. Versus a programming language, like the limitation is your imagination, right? Like the whole point is there's lots of, you know, built-in tools that are helpful. So like packages that other people create for, say, like making plotting easier, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, those people were building those like kind of from the ground up, and you could do it the same way. So that's a huge advantage of programming, is so much more capability. So I'd say, yes, you need it. You don't need both.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You definitely need one of them. If you want to do both, sure, that's fine. But like, you need one. Okay, the next skill, storytelling.
That's not so fanciful. I'm like, oh, we can do like a storytelling hour. So like, I guess that's like a cooler word than communication. I don't know if that's...
That yeah. falls so under like, communication yes, on this chart. So yes.
Okay. Yes. So you do need communication skills. So why do you need communication skills? Well, because like, you know, it's not... If you can't tell anyone what you found to the people who are going to... You know, whether, you know, you need to tell stories to like anyone from a, you know, depending on your role, to a product manager, to an executive, to the engineers, like you need to be able to explain to them, for example, why do you need this data? Or when they want to make a decision on this experiment, like, you know, why you think that's a bad idea, because they're peeking at the data and what that means. And, you know, being able to translate sometimes your, you know, technical knowledge into something that they can understand. And also, again, we talked about before, like being able to have a dialogue and go back and forth with them, because, you know, it's not just like, oh, I have to like dumb it down for these people. It's like, no, you have to, you know, that's a huge skill, is explaining it to them and then also eliciting from them the knowledge you need and working together, because they have knowledge and skills that you need to do your job well.
Great. Next skill, sleight of hand.
I have no idea what that means. Is that magic?
That's Dungeons and Dragons, the skill where you steal. Like, that's stealing in Dungeons and Dragons. That's the skill of stealing. Like, if you want to pickpocket, that's sleight of hand.
Is this on the list?
No, it's from a different source.
but
do you think a data you don't think a data scientist needs to pickpocket?
He's like pickpocket.
I would disagree. I would say you don't need it, but I think it helps. I think it could help, depending on how things.
What kind of corporate espionage are you doing, Jacqueline?
So wait, you really want your company to get ahead? Okay, the next skill: C++/object-oriented programming.
No. Certainly not C++. Like. Let's be clear, like, are there some data scientists who use C++? Like, yes. And are there some data science problems that probably necessitate that? Maybe also yes. But like, the vast majority of them don't. And you can also do things like R has a package RCPP. So like C is helpful, or C++, for, you know, writing faster code. But this is a way to translate your R code, or to easily write, you know, C++ code from R.
Yeah. So I have to summarize this as like, look, if you need to know like R or Python programming, but there's 1,000 other languages in the world. You don't need to know others. And if people are like, oh, real data scientists program in C++ or Scala or whatever, it's like, duh, I wouldn't really listen to.
Yeah, and you may need to learn it. Like, so at Etsy, you know, when I was working there, the big data was stored, you know, some of it was stored in a SQL database, but the like really big data was stored in Hadoop. And you would have to write Scala using Scalding to access that data. But like, they didn't expect people to come in knowing that, and it would have kind of been silly to like learn that beforehand, because many other companies that won't be useful at all. So also, you know, you can always pick up new skills on the job if you need them.
Yeah. So I got a few more, so let's just kind of go through them. Animal husbandry.
Okay, see, I think you're just messing with me. I mean, I do love animals, and if you work at a tech company, like, they may be pet friendly, so
I would say it's domain specific.
Get along with animals.
If you're working at a animal oriented or a farm and you're doing data science there, you might need to know what probably done. Okay, multivariate calculus.
I mean, oh god, I studied it. Somehow I like managed to do pretty well in that class, which I still like pat myself on the back, but I've literally never used it again.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of things where it's like, to really be a data scientist, you need to understand why the neural networks do what they do. And to do that, you need 4 years of blah, 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 and you need differential equations. And like, you don't. Like, for most, like, most of these data scientists do not need to know the underpinnings of the mathematics behind what they do. And that's fine. And if you do know that, and maybe you do, like, there's some jobs you might. Sure, whatever. But like, as a person looking to get into this field or move ahead in this field, like, don't go grabbing your calculus book. Like, it's probably fine to just apply the techniques you've learned the techniques, but not necessarily every minute detail of how they run. The next one.
Yeah. And like, maybe, I was just going to add that, like, it's also like helpful sometimes to learn like some about how they work, to be like, okay, in what case, like, may this clustering algorithm be better than the other? Like, what assumptions does it make of that data? But that, again, that's like still different than like being able to write it from scratch.
Right. Okay. So the next skill, and this one is actually from the sheet, like, this, I swear to God, this is from the sheet: hacker mindset.
Oh God. I hate the word hacker.
Why do you hate the word hacker?
It's also a very gendered term too. I mean, hacker's fine. I guess like a hacker mindset, like, I guess what that's trying to say is, you know, like a willing to experiment and like try things. And I do think that's true. Like, because often you may have to be creative about like, all right, the data that would be perfect, like, doesn't exist. Like, is there other data we can use? Or, you know, can I write a web scraping tool to like gather that data myself instead of like waiting for the data engineers to do it? So like, yes, I do think it's helpful to have a mindset of like being willing to try things and being flexible.
Yeah, I think trying things and being flexible is right. Hacker kind of has this idea that you're going to break systems apart from the inside to real fast build together something. And like, I don't think that's really what data science is like. And I think that's fine. Okay, so the last one, sorry, I just want to make sure I pronounce this one correctly. And this is the last one on the list. excuse me. A very particular set of skills I have acquired over a very long career, skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it.
Yes, I do like Taken. I am sorry to say that I don't think most of us would be very threatening after our data science career. I don't know.
You don't think that helps?
Like, some very specific job. No, I don't think this will help. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm also like not one of those, like, I couldn't even be like that hacker you see, right? And like all the like code scrolling past as they like hack into the criminal enterprises network. Like, yeah, no.
Okay.
So
you might be a little bit more junior of a data scientist, like maybe a senior data scientist.
Oh, wow.
Maybe like a.
Yeah, you can do this, Jacqueline.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Believe me, all the assassinations I do or whatever. I've never actually seen the movie. I just like them. Okay. And that concludes my game. You won.
What do I mean?
I don't know. You won.
A free copy of our book?
That's right. And you get to be the guest star on episode 2 of this show.
That's our show for the week. Check us out on our next episode as we discuss different types of companies that hire data scientists. Thank you for listening. Please tweet at us or share on LinkedIn your data science opinions, feedback on the show, or questions for us with the hashtag DataSciCareer. You can buy a copy of the book at bestbook.cool and use code BuildBook40%. That's BuildBook40% symbol for 40% off. Our theme song is by the extremely funny Matt Bouchel, and thanks to our publisher Manning for helping our book exist.
And may none of your regressions overfit. Yeah!
Yay! Outro music! Do, 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 do.